The Monologue.
More businesses are now subject to the vaccine passport in King County. Proof of vaccination is now required at smaller bars and restaurants for any customers over the age of 12. Obviously, that only applies to the restaurants, but adults at bars, specifically when we say small locations. These are the businesses that have 12 or fewer people who can fit into the restaurant or bar at a time. So some of the sort of hole-in-the-wall joints now have to do this as well. This does not apply to takeout orders or anything like that unless they choose to do that. This just means if you're going to sit down for a meal or for a drink, you have to show proof of vaccination. Now, the larger businesses have been doing this for a while now, thanks to the mandate. Haven't really heard any meaningful challenges from customers at this point. We've seen some pushing back and some of the, frankly, the cities that you would expect it to come from. It's not going to happen in Seattle, less so in Bellevue, but Algona Pacific, yeah, you're going to get some pushback there because the people who live there are more right-leaning, actually support some semblance of medical privacy. Now, all of this, of course, is due to Dow Constantine, the King County executive.
Now it's going to apply to all major gatherings and all really indoor spaces.
Yep, everyone gets impacted in certain categories of business. You have folks like Tommy Pappas, the owner of Hotel Albatross in Seattle. It's a bar. He spoke to Q13. He's a big supporter.
The virus doing what it's done to our communities for the last 2 years, at least we have a place where we're doing everything that we can to protect everybody from staff to customer.
You're so heroic. In fact, I would give you some sort of medal to express my gratitude, except honestly, you're not doing everything you can to stop the spread of COVID. If you were doing everything you could, you would close down. But you're not doing that. And I give someone like this a little bit harder time than I would a small business owner, because there are small business owners who don't want to do this but are forced into it. They may even understand it, but they don't want to do it because they understand what this can mean to business. But there are folks like Tommy who leans in to this. In fact, his bar required proof back in August, months before the county regulations went into effect. Because, of course, as he tells Q13, he's a hero.
The public has now learned what's expected when they go out, you know. And if you want to go out and have dinner and get some drinks and stuff, please come on. But make sure you got your stuff ready to go.
Oh, thank you, Tommy. Do you check also for STD status before you let people into a bar that presumably some people go because they want to hook up? COVID can be treated. Herpes can't. I mean, it can, but it's not going away. I'm just kind of curious, if that's the world that we're going down, that somehow Tommy thinks he is due private medical information, not because Dow Constantine forces upon him, but because he's trying to do the right thing. Why don't you do the right thing when it comes to the transmission of STDs? Or frankly, let's stay in the world of vaccines. What about the flu vaccine? You don't want the flu to spread. You doing anything there? No. Now, maybe ultimately he does. Maybe he goes down this pathway. Now, ultimately, I don't understand. I don't think we have any of the data yet on either side of an argument to say that this had an impact on business. How does it impact? How do you actually calculate that? But I can tell you this, even if it's a small impact, when we're talking about restaurants and bars, which have incredibly thin margins of profit margins, it hurts. And I can tell you personally, still, I'm not going to go to a restaurant or a bar, or anywhere that asks me for proof of vaccination in this state, in this country. I'm not going to do that at this point. Will I be forced to at some point? Probably. But I'm going to hold out as long as I can. And as Peyton points out, I make $285 million a year. That's a lot. Do they call it, what do they call it? Scratch.
Cheddar.
Cheddar to spread around.
Chicken.
Chicken, I was about to say, Marshawn Lynch. It's a lot of chicken I could be spreading around, and I'm choosing not to.
The interview.
Oof. Okay. So last week's November jobs report was a huge disappointment. The expectation was that we would see in this country somewhere between 570,000 or so and 600,000 new jobs. And no, we just got a little over 200,000. Joining me with her reaction is Monica Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Public Affairs in the President Trump administration. Monica, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Jason, it's so great to be back with you. Thank you for having me back.
This was not a good report, was it?
No, no. And in fact, this is the worst jobs report of 2021, worst jobs report of the year. So they were expecting close to 600,000 jobs for the month of November. And instead, we got about 200,000. So it was a very extreme miss and a big, big disappointment. But we should also keep in mind, too, and I think it's kind of gotten lost in every month's discussion when we get these jobs reports, is that what we are talking about here is not job creation, which is what we usually talk about when we talk about monthly jobs reports. We are talking about job recovery. So we're still in a recovery operation in the U.S. economy. And the Biden team over the last 11 months since they've been in office has really dropped the ball. When President Trump left office in January, he handed President Biden the fastest economic recovery from any crisis on record. And we saw dynamic job recovery last year when we started to open the economy back up. And yet what we have seen month after month under Biden has been a gross disappointment.
What some folks on the left will do to try to spin these numbers, they'll point to the one drop that on paper looks good, which is the unemployment went from 4.6 to 4.2%. And obviously, when the economy is healthy and you get that number, it's good. But that's not actually, it's not because people are getting jobs, it's because people are no longer looking and they no longer count as far as this unemployment number goes.
Yes, that is exactly right. And the thing to keep in mind, too, you know, people used to talk about the labor shortage under President Trump. But the reason we had a labor shortage, we had about 7 million jobs when the economy was really, really booming pre-pandemic. We had about 7 million job openings that couldn't be filled. Why? Because we were at full employment. President Trump had a pro-growth economic agenda in place, tax cuts, regulatory relief, fair trade deals, and unleashing our great energy sector. And that pro-growth strategy just delivered this incredible booming economy. So we were literally at full employment with record low unemployment rates for every demographic group, including African Americans, Hispanic Americans, women, veterans, Americans with disabilities. We were literally at full employment. So we had a labor shortage, but it was a natural one as a result of a booming economy. Now we've got a labor crunch, but it is a completely artificial one, Jason. And, you know, when you've got socialist policies, everything is artificial. Yeah. This is what you get when you get a command economy. Everything is warped. The whole market, the whole system is warped. And so now you've got about 10 million job openings. Businesses of all sizes cannot find help. And it's largely because the government under Biden and the Democrats have created the incentives for people to stay at home rather than go to work. People are economically rational. If you tell them I'll pay you more to sit at home and watch Netflix, of course they're going to do it. I would do it.
Yeah. And what makes the issue worse, and we've only got a minute left, but what makes the issue worse is the idea that we're going to force vaccines on people. And as much as I'm pro-vaccine, I want people to make up their own mind in consultation with their doctor. But Biden is telling you have to get the shot, despite the fact that so far the courts have said, no, this is not constitutional. What role do you think that plays? Obviously, it's making it worse, but by how much?
Yes, it's really exacerbating the labor crunch. It's putting a big wet blanket on the labor market because a lot of people who are resistant to the shot for whatever reason are being fired. They're being laid off. You see it in the private sector. You're seeing it in government with the military. You're seeing it in areas that are the people who are supposed to keep us safe, like the military and police and firefighters, first responders. So these people are being laid off and or fired, and they are now being counted among the unemployed. So you've got two really bad government policies, paying people more to stay at home than go to work, and the vaccine mandates, creating this perfect storm of a labor market crunch that is being made worse by the supply chain crisis and the out of control inflation that we've got going on, the last thing we should do is pass this additional monstrous multi-trillion dollar socialist spending bill that the Democrats want. They look like they're going to go down that road, but I'm telling you, if they do, all of the problems that we have just talked about are going to be put on steroids in 2022.
But good news, according to the Biden administration, Democrats, there's no problems whatsoever. None of the things you just listed as a crisis actually exist. It's the gaslighting of the American people. We've been talking with Monica Crowley, who is the former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Public Affairs. Monica, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
The Monologue.
Last week, within just a span of 11 hours, there were five unrelated shootings in South Seattle. Just last week, five. And two of them occurred either at or a block and a half away from a Seattle school. This latest report, an exclusive that I have up at KTTH.com. Now, one of the shootings occurred at Garfield High School. Second shooting injured a 15-year-old girl and involved another teenager, and it was just a block away from Aki Kuros Middle School, also again in South Seattle. Now, this violence is nothing new for South Seattle. Unfortunately, South Seattle has to deal with this kind of violence. But it did prompt some extra police patrols near at least four schools in the district, according to a police source. Seattle Public Schools said, hey, we're going to increase some security for the near future as well. None of this would be necessary, in my view, if we, number one, actually enforced the law, but number two, didn't decide to ban school resource officers and these extra patrols by SPD on Seattle Public School campus, and yet that's exactly what we did. Shocking that when you take police away from a situation, away from a neighborhood, or in this case, away from a school, you see an increase in crime. Shocking, I know. We have seen an uptick in violence at Seattle Public Schools. Overall, we've seen an uptick in crime at Seattle Public Schools. And the only thing that you can very clearly point to that is different is that SPS decided that they were going to kick off campus SPD. Now, thankfully, no one died in these shootings. Particularly over at Garfield, the indication, according to SPD, is that there was a gun battle on campus. There was a gun battle on campus. And at the middle school, in the middle of the morning, a 15-year-old girl ended up getting shot in her leg, both of her legs, as she sat inside of a stolen, bullet-riddled Jeep. This is someone who's very clearly on the wrong path. Could this path be course-corrected by actually having a officer in her life on her school campus showing her that not ACAB? Could things be different for these schools? And maybe bad guys thinking, oh, if I'm going to commit bad things, I'm not going to go to a campus, whether it's during school or after school, because this is a place that actually respects the law and will enforce the law? Maybe. Do I know that SPD staffing is at historical lows, where it will take at least 8 minutes, on average, 8 minutes for SPD to respond to an emergency? Do I know that every second matters when there is an incident on campus? Yeah. An officer would be able to respond quicker if they were actually on campus, but they're not. And so kids are at risk thanks to Seattle Public Schools.
The interview.
The first Republican to challenge the now appointed Democrat Secretary of State, he has announced his run. State Senator Keith Wagner of Cedro Woolley has thrown his hat into the race. He wants to be the next Secretary of State, a position that has since been vacated because our previous one, Kim Wyman, decided to leave the office to pursue a job on the national level. Joining me on the line is State Senator Keith Wagner. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
Why do you want this job in particular?
Well, for several reasons, but I'll tell you that the impetus for it was the poor way that I think the governor handled selection for a new Secretary of State. He had a golden opportunity to show bipartisanship and put a qualified Republican in a seat that voters have wisely put qualified Republicans in for the last 56 years. So I thought that the governor missed an opportunity, and I want to fix that error of his. I thought he used the opportunity rather Machiavellian way to take out a senator who is a bit of an annoyance to him.
Yeah.
So that's the first point.
And just real quickly, to remind people, Steve Hobbs is a state senator who has now taken this position appointed by Governor Inslee. Hobbs was one of the Democrats, slightly more moderate, but he was one of the Democrats who would sometimes say, no, you guys are going way too far to the left. And he would get in the way. He would actually ally with some Republicans. Jay Inslee didn't like that, but now he doesn't have to deal with it. And of course, the hope is that Hobbs is replaced with someone who's very far to the left. My apologies.
Right. And that's exactly the way I read those tea leaves, too. And I think as Secretary of State, I can do a lot of good in that office. You know, there's a lot of different responsibilities in the office, things that managing the state library and the archives and incorporation of LLCs and nonprofits. But I suspect that the focus is going to be on election and accountability for certification of that process. And there's been, you know, frankly, a decline in confidence in our systems. And I think that I can build confidence back in the voting system of Washington State.
What does this mean politically for your district? I mean, you are a strong Republican. You represent a very red area, right? Arlington, Monroe, Sultan, Gold Bar, Index. And of course, Cedra Woolley, you've got lots of experience that made you perfectly suited for the state legislature, former mayor of Cedra Woolley. I know you served on the city council there as well. Does this make the district now open to a Democrat challenge?
Well, if I'm lucky enough to make it to the Secretary of State's office, I think that there are many good Republicans in that area who would happily fill my shoes and do a great job. I won't name names right now, but yeah, I love my job in the Senate, but I think that I can do more impactful work if I were to move up to Secretary of State.
What's the first thing you would tackle in that office?
I think the first thing I would tackle is a lot of the questions that people have been asking that they don't feel like they got good answers to. And, you know, I'm one of the people who believes we have a very solid structure in our voting system. That's one of the easiest systems to vote in the nation. And that's a good thing because we ought to be encouraging our people to vote. It ought to be a joyful thing when you go and vote. But I want to rebuild confidence. You hear these questions all the time. People that say there's an anomaly or there was an administrative foible over here. How did that happen? Why did that happen? And they kind of have been hushed in this very polarized environment that if you say there's something imperfect about the system, you're some kind of election denier or you don't believe our elections are fair. I think you can question and should question the system without saying you don't have any faith in it. And I think all of those, you know, reasonable criticisms of the system deserve answers. And I don't feel like the state has given good answers for some of those questions.
What's the one question that needs an answer? We only got about 30, 45 seconds.
People have questions about voter rolls, about how come somebody who hasn't lived here for years keeps getting a ballot out my house. We all have an anecdote. I think every single one of us, my wife knows a green card holder who got a ballot and didn't know what to do with it. You know, it wasn't something they did purposefully, but it identifies little holes in the system that we should be fixing. And I think the state can do a much better job and we would build confidence because without confidence, people self-select out. And that's a form of voter suppression that I think we can do better for the state on.
Keith Wagner is running for Secretary of State, first Republican to announce. Very quickly, do you expect any other Republicans to step up?
You know, I don't know right now. I've heard some rumors, and I don't know if anybody has really decided at this point.
Well, of course, this is an important position, one that we're going to be paying a lot of attention to in this next election. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story and joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Well, Chris Cuomo is out, CNN's only star anchor, out perhaps not due to his unethical dealings with his brother, something that intellectually I think most people can understand. It's still unethical, but we at least understand that. Might have something to do with this bombshell claim of sexual harassment. Joining me on the line to discuss is our friend Curtis Houck. He, of course, is the editor over at Newsbusters. Curtis, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Jason.
There's so many places to go with this conversation. We'll start with, did they get this right, ultimately?
It's an interesting question because it's been over a year plus of behavior from Chris Cuomo that has led to this. You look at the text messages that were unearthed by the New York Attorney General investigation. The content of them were not surprising to really anyone who was paying attention.
Exactly.
He talked about putting his family first, and you know, the idea that Cuomo wasn't snooping around for dirt on his brother's accusers or snooping around to other journalists to see what other news outlets were working on in terms of stories about his brother. None of this is surprising. And in fact, I think I would believe the claim that's being put out today by Cuomo's spokesperson suggesting that Jeff Zucker knew about all of this. So the answer is, and this is a thing that they love, media love doing under Donald Trump, what did Jeff Zucker know and when did he know it? I think that's such a huge question going forward. In addition to the sexual misconduct allegation against Chris Cuomo, which was from when he was at ABC News, we should point out. And thus far in its coverage over the last 3 days, ABC News has yet to admit that said claim comes from Cuomo's time at CNN. In fact, this morning they said the claim came when Cuomo was at another network.
Mm-hmm. The question then becomes, though, what was learned? If this is, in fact, just about that one instance with this one accuser, which maybe they learned some new details over the last several days, because I look at this reaction of, okay, he was not fired because of what happened with his brother, regardless of the new information that we got. And yes, it seems like he lied or at least misled about his role here. To your point, he's been doing this for over a year, different antics, and you know, you give your star or who you perceive to be the star a little bit of an extra leash in certain things because you can justify it based on the revenue it brings in or the brand recognition, whatever it happens to be. Something had to have happened over the last few days, and either it's something that's undeniable, something that is egregious, something that there was enough information to warrant a quick expulsion, or it was somewhat minor, but all of those little moments in the last year just became a little bit too much, and this potentially new information would push it over the line for CNN. Those are the only two things that I can think of. What about you?
Yeah, it's interesting in CNN's statement that they talked about how that they already had grounds for termination, but then they said that this really put it over the edge. It caused them to act further, to take action immediately. So it's kind of confusing that they're trying to say here that we, quote, had cause to terminate already, but yeah, when new allegations came to us this week, we took them seriously and saw no reason to delay taking immediate action. I believe it was Eric Wempel from the Washington Post that pointed this out over the weekend, which is, are you guys saying, if you're saying that you already had grounds for termination, why didn't you pull the plug already during the week instead of wait until this story comes in and it leaks out and then you fire him at 5:09 p.m. Eastern on a Saturday? And that's so telling. You know, this happened with Brian Williams in NBC when he was either suspended or permanently let go. That was done on a, you know, early Saturday evening as well. It doesn't take, you know, listeners that aren't involved in the news business like you or I are to know why they did that. So there's just so many questions that we have yet to answer. And CNN says they will continue to investigate as appropriate. I'm not going to hold my breath in terms of whether they will make any of these claims public. So mm-hmm. I guess the only thing that we may know is whatever Deborah Katz, the lawyer for said woman from, you know, who worked with Cuomo at ABC News produces, because, you know, it sure seems like that was actually what put them over the edge, that this claim of sexual harassment, none of the ethics-free behavior from previous year plus.
Yeah, it's this unidentified additional information. That's why I say, I mean, I think that they clearly chose their statement, the words in their statement carefully. CNN says additional information, not new information per se, but additional information. I know that they clarified a little bit when they gave a statement to the New York Times, but do you think ultimately this is about that instance that we kind of already know about and people can remember? I mentioned this earlier today on Fox News of, you know, there's that weird Michael Cohen leaked audio, a conversation between he and Chris Cuomo, where Chris Cuomo sort of preemptively denies any kind of, it was just very odd to me. So do you think this is just about that one instance, or is there a different story here that they are sort of withholding and will eventually come out?
I'm inclined to think that that's what it was, that the sexual harassment claim was what set them over the edge. Call me a cynic, but I believe they knew about that.
But it's not new, right?
Exactly, which they also knew about, but I believe that the Me Too angle of it is really what set them over the edge, even though, yes, Tucker Carlson has played the video or the audio of Michael Cohen and Chris Cuomo talking about this, and it was just one of the strangest things you'll hear, where Cuomo just preemptively brings this up in a conversation with Michael Cohen. But, you know, this is where we are right now, and CNN has just created this mess, and now it's completely blown up in their faces. You know, Brian Seltzer's out there trying to say that this was a death by 1,000 cuts. Oh, please, give me a break here.
The 1,000th cut has already occurred. That's my point, is there's nothing really new.
Exactly. There's nothing new here. It was just finally that CNN decided that they were going to act on this, but do it on a Saturday as opposed to Tuesday when mm-hmm. he was suspended, which, again, you and I both know, Friday night news dump, you know, or even better, Saturday afternoon news dump, so that people think that, you know, they think that it'll have the least negative impact on the network. But as we both know, it's continuing to reverberate. People are still interested in the story because it is the Cuomos. They're like the Trumps are constantly in the spotlight and have a desire to be in the spotlight.
And there's the irony, of course,
for better or worse.
The irony of the same basic story, with obviously some differences, but the basic theme of misconduct leading to the demise of their employment, at least as of now. In just a little bit, in about 10 minutes from now, we'll hear the replacement show for Chris Cuomo, at least a temporary fill-in with Michael Smerkomish. And, you know, he's sort of down the line, down the middle, leans kind of to the right, or at least he once did. He's sort of a CNN, you know, boring pick. There's kind of no win for him. He's not going to, I sincerely doubt he's the next star for CNN. So they get a couple extra eyeballs for them. They can get 17 more viewers, and that would be a win given, you know, how poorly they generally do up against Hannity. What is the strategy other than we'll address it right at the beginning and then kind of pretend it doesn't exist?
Right. I think you're exactly right. And Smerkonish is not going to get the job either. He lives in Philadelphia, loves being in Philadelphia. He has a full-time SiriusXM show, which Chris Cuomo still has, as we should note. Let's get after it. So we'll see what happens with that.
What a great
show,
title.
If he continues to have it. Let's get after it. But Smerkonish, again, he's a very kind of boring guy. He's more of the CNN of yesteryear, mm-hmm. I should say, Jason. He's more of the kind of analyst. You know, he may lean kind of left. He kind of goes right sometimes. He's relatively inoffensive. But that's not what CNN and Jeff Zucker are about right now. Jake Tapper probably likes where he is with the kids that he has. Breonna Keeler would be a more natural slot, but she has young kids as well and loves talking about that. So she's on in the morning. So it really puts CNN in an interesting position. So I'm going to go with, yes, Jim Acosta is going to angle hard for this, or Brian Seltzer, which Tucker reported, which both of which I should point out, people haven't seen the video that I tweeted on Saturday night. They were the people that broke the news on CNN to their five viewers, which, I mean, life imitates art. You could not have made that up. So, but those are the kinds of types of people that I would expect Jeff Zucker.
And they don't have a bench over at CNN. They don't have another star that they can easily move in because they don't really have, stars, not in the post or pre-Trump era, like right when he got into office. Their biggest star was Chris Cuomo. Anderson Cooper is kind of, people don't talk about him anymore. Don Lemon is you know, dealing with his own issues, and his accuser had come out today and made some pretty bold statements. And, you know, Don Lemon is still on the air. That's why I say that there's got to be something else. Just real quick, what does this mean for Don Lemon? They were BFFs. He, you know, right. stood up for Cuomo whenever he could. Again, I made the comment on Fox News this morning of that would have been the good interview for Brian Stelter to have, not two or three unknown people with some ties to CNN, but have on Don Lemon, who was one of the big PR guys for Chris Cuomo.
He saw the writing on the wall on Monday because he had this aside during their bro handoff to talk about how much he loves him and he's thankful for him. Like, they knew that the end was coming. Yeah. So that was a big tell. And they had the reason, Vince Colonnade points this out, so I can't take credit for it. The reason that they had these long handoffs is because Lemon could not draw viewers in on his own. So they had to have Chris Cuomo there to do this bizarre routine with them that was just a huge hit for us at Newsbusters, writing about whatever dumb statements they talked about when they mocked crime, for example. That was maybe the biggest hit that we had, mocked crime in our cities. So I don't know what's going to happen to Don Lemon. He has his own problems. He can't draw ratings. But because he's the black gay host of the only person of color really on CNN for all primetime, if not all day, you're really not going to fire him. He's kind of in the Joy Reid position. There's very little that Lemon could do or say to get him fired aside from this claim that's still kind of percolating below the surface.
Well, we'll see where things go. We'll know in about 10 minutes from now as Michael Smirkomish takes over and puts the 17 audience members to sleep. Yeah, oh my gosh, I can't think of a worse choice today. But you know what? It's kind of lose-lose for whoever takes over. Unless they had a personality. If they had someone who actually has a literal personality to put there, hey, a little bit, you know, increased interest in that slot could actually help the person who overperforms. We won't get that from Michael Smirkomish, but we always get an overperformance from Curtis Houck. I set the bar very low, though. I'm kidding, of course. Curtis is the editor over at Newsbusters, a website you should be checking out every single day. Make sure you follow Curtis on Twitter. Curtis, thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. Talk again soon.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
Is it time to change the definition of fully vaccinated? Some people like to say yes, it is. Others would like us to not change anything. I'm one of those people. I'm not considered an expert from the medical side of things, but you know, this idea that all of a sudden, according to the Kaiser Health News, that, you know, folks on the public health sector side and frankly, politicians are asking this question has everything to do with the policies that are in place, not laws, but policies that have been imposed by politicians like the vaccine passport. We talked about it, in fact, earlier this hour, that, you know, if you have to be fully vaccinated in order to gain entry into a restaurant or a movie theater, gym, a venue, whatever it happens to be, well, that obviously changes the requirements for people if all of a sudden fully vaccinated now includes a booster shot. Now, I don't know what the realistic expectation is in a case like this, because you're asking folks to who work for these venues or for these businesses that are impacted, you would be asking them to do some quick math every single time they got a passport, if someone comes in, because you have to wait at least 6 months before getting your booster shot. And then after that, you got to wait, obviously, I believe it's still 2 weeks for it to be fully considered in the system. And so if you come in, let's say at 5 months and, you know, 27 days and, you know, you're asking the wait staff or whoever's taking your ticket at Climate Pledge to Virtue Signal Arena to do the quick math, I mean, it could get a little bit confusing. I know that people want to pretend that just putting up a sign that says any time before this date should be, it doesn't quite work that way. There's still a little bit of mental math that needs to be done. You obviously have to be paying attention, assuming this stuff is being enforced in any meaningful way. But again, I don't know why we are pretending that natural immunity doesn't exist and this doesn't take into account natural immunity. I don't know whether or not anyone is even thinking about the fact that with so many breakthrough cases, if you've gotten the full dosage of the, you know, the Pfizer vaccine, as an example, this is pre-booster, and 2 months later, after being fully vaccinated, and that would count as fully vaccinated, and you get COVID, you're a breakthrough case. You're telling me that that person then has to get another booster? I understand why that individual might feel uncomfortable doing that. I totally get that. I would feel uncomfortable doing that at that point. And again, I'm not anti-vaccine or anti-booster. I understand why it's deemed necessary because the protection offered by the vaccine wanes. But beyond that, are we doing this every 6 months now? We're now going to pretend that we should be taking a vaccine every 6 months right now? We are holding that position. For how long does this last? Forever? What are the long-term effects of getting that many booster shots? Let's not pretend that we know the answer to that. It doesn't mean that the answer is bad, right? It doesn't mean that it's bad news. It doesn't mean that it's going to kill us in 10 years. No one's saying that. But we definitely don't know. We definitely don't know. But these public health professionals are making these decisions on our behalf and having these conversations without our input. And that just seems wrong. And it seems to me like it's going to lead to more resistance. And that's the exact opposite of what these public health officials and these politicians tell us they want.
The last rant.
And with that, I got a rant. And you know what? This is a little bit personal in that it impacts me on a regular basis, though I would argue that to those of you who might think that this is superficial, it impacts you as well. Can y'all stop walking on the wrong side of a sidewalk or in an aisle? One side is supposed to go to the right, moving forward, and the other side to the left. We have a general acceptance of this, that you are to, from your perspective, go on the right and see someone coming down an aisle or a sidewalk on the left. But always to your perspective, you're always on the right when you're walking somewhere, with some exceptions, I suppose. But there are people who will walk on both sides of the aisle or both sides of a sidewalk or wherever it is they're walking, and it's causing chaos because they'll do it on a crowded street. And so me walking on the right side of a sidewalk in front of someone else who's coming towards me on their left, my right, whereas someone behind them is doing the right thing and on their right, it's causing problems. And these people seem to not care. And it is driving me nuts. We need some semblance of order, not chaos. No more chaos on our sidewalks. The other people who are walking in groups of like three or four people, they just walk the entire, they take over the entire width of a sidewalk and they don't do any breaks. They don't like move to the back of the two friends. So it's like two and two. They just continue and they expect that you're the one who's going to walk around. And of course we walk around because we don't want to run right into them. But at some point, I'm just going to end up running right into someone. Mostly out of spite and to see how much I can get away with that kind of assault. I'm just being honest. I won't do well. I'm kidding. So everyone, let's return to some order on our sidewalks. Is that too much to ask? That's the last rants.